Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Fred from a long travel excursion. Welcome back, Fred.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, by the time this goes live, I'll probably be over jet lag. But one of the downsides of aging, at least for the human body, is that this resilience to jet lag seems to diminish a little bit. So it's been a little tougher this time than it was even 10 years ago, yeah, by far. So yeah, I'm glad to be back.
And you were traveling all over Asia, correct? You're in Singapore. Where else were you? Japan?
Well, just transfers in Japan. Spent a week in Singapore and taught a class on design for reliability for a mechanical design team, engineering team. And really good folks. I've always enjoyed the engineers and the folks I've worked with in Singapore. And it's a beautiful country and it's a wonderful place to visit. But the talent and the practical common sense approach to engineering is right up there with the best in the world. So I always enjoy working with them. They ask good questions. They care about their customers. They usually very down to earth and practical in their solutions. So it's a joy working with them.
And were you out in New Zealand as well, or is that coming up?
Well, Ireland's coming up, yeah. But I think my wife's starting to look at it, New Zealand again. There's a few trees we haven't sat under, and she's looking to go again.
Yeah, can't get enough of heading over there. I've heard great things, never had the opportunity to go. But you're teaching a course on design for reliability while you're over there. That got me thinking. Design for reliability, that requires doing some analysis, some modeling, some trade-offs to understand what is the best approach, balancing cost, performance, risk, all those wonderful things we do. Is that correct?
I don't know how you can do it without it. I mean, just let me tell you a quick story about a client that I worked with many years ago. Is they had a 50% field failure rate. So half of the products they manufactured and shipped and sold to a new customer failed within their warranty period, which was only a year or 2 years, something like that. And so they were making essentially two products for every one they sold. And so their huge impact on their production capability, you know, they planned to build so many, but then they had to double it, basically, because they're giving away every other one of them. One of the issues they had, among many, but one of the issues they had is that everybody in the organization, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, the folks sourcing different major components, were all using the system reliability goal. And they all essentially achieved for their subsystem, for their power supply or compressor or for whatever component it was, they got parts that met the system goal, which is great. They were actually good engineers and got what they thought was the required component to meet the reliability goals they thought it should be. The trouble is that whenever it meets the system goal and you do a very basic model or simple multiplication of those reliabilities to get the system goal. So they ended up, instead of getting a 95% reliable product, they ended up with closer to 50% reliable, because of the number of components that were all at 95% reliable. I'm waving my hands and looking to do a drawing, but that simple misunderstanding of what target these elements of the design were supposed to get to threw their design completely as being fairly non-reliable or unreliable when it got out to the field. It would have worked if everybody made a perfect, no failures at all, except one person, say the power supply, hit the system goal. That would work. But that's the kind of modeling, just it to be formal, that you can do it on a whiteboard, you can do it in Excel, you can do it on a piece of paper, especially for a series system where any one failure causes the system to go down. Those are usually pretty straightforward. But that simple thought of, well, how does the individual items affect the overall system's reliability? That was missed completely, and they paid for it for years.
Like you said, it's a very simple series system. That's relatively easy to figure out. But when you start adding redundant pass, multiple pass, switching times, all those other things, I'm sure that gets a bit more complicated.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'm thinking that you can model throughput, for example, in a factory line, but then you start adding that capacity of repair time and availability of how long it takes to clear a jam is one thing, but replacing a motor is a completely different thing. Redundancies, the buffering space, that can be part of the system and its throughput capacity. Even within one system, I worked some time ago with a bottling plant, and just the bottler, I think it had like 64 nozzles on it or something like that. They're not technically in series, but if one of them failed, it won't fill, but the other 63 can. So you run in a degraded mode, and then that adds complexity to whether you're modeling reliability or throughput.
Yeah, so with all these different variables, should reliability engineers make all these models on paper, or should they look for something like a software to assist with this?
Well, I think we talked about CMS at one time and CMS model systems, and the first step is not go buy a software package. And I am the same way with statistics packages. It's the first step is not go shopping for a software package and go get Minitab or Weibull++ or any of the other ones. It's, I might be old school, but I think you need to understand what you're doing first and understand the software will give you answers. Whatever package it is, for modeling packages or anywhere else. But if you're not conversant in what it's doing and how it gets to its answers, you can't judge the results you get. And so I don't know that, to answer your question, James, I think there are lots of different software packages out there that can do reliability modeling, and even very, very complex reliability modeling. Things that will use PetriNets or Markov models. There's others that are based on Monte Carlo simulations. Others are, it could be very simplistic and allow you to do the what-if analysis in a basic way. They can make the calculations easier, yet the reliability engineer still has to provide the information and set up the structure. And I think doing that on paper, even if it's a subset of your overall system, to fully understand what you're trying to achieve, then put it in the software, make the calculations quicker and easier, I think makes a whole lot more sense. I think the software tools, not just modeling software, but a lot of software tools can be dangerous if they're not used by somebody who knows what they're doing with it.
One of my questions I was going to ask is, you know, if you're doing some of this advanced reliability modeling with this software, do you need to be a CRE to use it? Or maybe not a CRE, but do you have to have a fundamental understanding of the analysis and the statistics that you're trying to use and the models you're trying to use? Do you need to know that stuff? Or can you just plug numbers into a package and, nope, we're good to go?
No, you can't just plug into a package. I mean, you certainly physically can. If, you know, there's a YouTube video for everything, it seems like. You get down with a brand new software package you've never seen before, and within 10, 15 minutes, you know, for say a production line, and you've got, say, some reliability data on the 10 pieces of equipment in the line, but you could create a reliability model, an availability model for that line in an hour, and self-teaching yourself, going through the help screens, calling support, watching YouTube videos, whatever. It will give you an answer. It will say it's this reliable or has this expected availability. Will that number be right or useful or anything like that? Most likely not. You'd have to be very lucky. So, I think you need to understand the fundamentals of what that tool is doing for you. So if you're doing basic reliability block diagrams and the series system is the product of the individual subsystem's reliability, you should know that that's a product function. It's a multiplication of those individual reliabilities. The tool does the math for you. Now, when it gets more complicated, and there's dependencies, and there's parallel systems, and there's standby redundancy with imperfect switching, the math just gets more complicated. and there's more information you need to feed into the system. And so at some point, you're going to be making a bunch of assumptions and filling in blanks that may or may not dramatically affect the results. And the more you understand about how the modeling technology, not the software, the modeling, whether it's block diagrams or Markov models, works, the better chance you have of accomplishing. It's the same, James, as, you know, mechanical engineers that want to run a finite element model on their system. More of the CAD programs now have that as a feature that's built in, so they can set up a simple mesh and they can run a model. Now, somebody that's educated and has it, especially in finite element modeling, would probably use that same tool in a slightly different way and get an answer not only quicker, but get an answer that's more meaningful to the question that's being asked. So the tools are getting better. They're doing the heavy lifting of all these calculations for us. They don't know your system. They don't know your process or your plant or your equipment, and they can't go get the numbers for you. So you need to fill in those blanks, and that comes with knowledge of what's important, what's not that important within those systems.
Yeah, so understanding the fundamental models, the fundamental statistics behind it, and then quality. If you don't know what good data is versus poor data, it's not going to deliver what you expect. The software will give you an answer. Whether or not that answer is repeatable, correct, is a whole other story.
Do you remember when there was a floating point error in some of the early, I think they were the 286 class machines? This is some time ago. There was Intel had some error in their calculations capability within their chips. I was working in an engineering group, and we thought this was horrible. We can't have this error. Turns out the error was like one digit off after 15 significant digits. When you take three huge numbers and manipulate them a particular way, and then you can see the error. And most of the time, we worked with two, maybe three significant digits. So the chance that that round-off error that occurred way out would have any impact on anything we did, yet we were outraged, you know, and we're ready to jump ship and get, I think mostly we all wanted new computers. It's one of those things is, if what we're doing is really, really fundamental or basic and huge margin of error in the data that we're collecting, there's just a lot of uncertainty in the information we're collecting, huge measurement error and so on, the chance of us getting meaningful results is reduced. But if we're looking for just gross differences or huge changes, they might be good enough. Will it predict the actual run to failure times for this piece of equipment? No. But if I have really, really good data, I get a lot closer to being able to know that. So part of modeling is knowing, well, what are you going to do with it? How ambiguous can the input data be, or precise, vice versa? If it's a critical decision and millions of dollars hang in the balance, well, then do the due diligence and use the right model, get the good data, understand the results that you're getting, make sure that they're valid. It's garbage in, garbage out, and it includes what buttons we push on software.
Yeah, so definitely it's dependent upon the user to get good results out of that. But even with all those, I'm not going to say cons or potential issues, because let's be honest, you really don't want someone who doesn't understand reliability engineering or statistical analysis or modeling or understanding what they're trying to fix, using software like this, making decisions around products or safety systems or whatever else we're doing with it. So if we take out that factor, is it a must, or can someone get by without that software nowadays to be effective and efficient in what they're doing?
Oh, no. 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 I mean, I first learned how to do regression analysis by hand and using sum of squares techniques in a spreadsheet, basically, was our big innovation. For variable analysis, I used checking if something was normally distributed or fitting data to a normal distribution. I did it by hand on graph paper, special paper that if it was a straight line, it was a normal distribution, and you could pull off the parameters right from the graph. And same for Weibull. We could by hand and do the regression analysis that way. It was tedious. And as soon as I ended up with a package that could do the regression for me, I used that immediately. Now, that's why I tend to think I am kind of old school, because I learned how, you know, one data point can really change. If you're doing a least squares method for regression analysis, one point can really change how the fit occurs. Say you're going to do an average and you got 10 numbers and you're punching them into your calculator and doing a quick calculation. If you miss one of the numbers, you should be aware of what the answer should be to notice if it is the result of your calculator is off. And I don't think you can intuitively add 10 numbers just to get a ballpark, an order of magnitude of where, unless you understand addition, right? And so when we go to regression analysis and we're using things like maximum likelihood estimators, using a variety of ways to transform data so that we can use different techniques on it and so on, sure, software will let you do that. But if you don't know what you're doing, I think I told you this story one time, is my data analysis professor, when I was doing my master's degree, I showed him a package that would fit, I think it was like 8 distributions on a piece of data, and it would fit them all really fast, and it would rank order them by which one the software thought fit better. And his response was, so that's just plain evil. And what do you mean? He says, the ability of the software to give you the answer you want versus the answer that's in the data, profound. You can try all 8 distributions until you get the result you want and then make your boss happy, right? The reality won't be consistent with that. It won't pan out that way, but you can manipulate the data by just changing which distribution you fit it to. And he says that's still part of an analyst, is to make sure that what you're doing is justifiable and makes sense. And the software is just crunching a bunch of numbers. So what process this is dealing with is just a stack of numbers. And so it's understanding the physics of what's happening, how it's being measured. All of those things don't go away just because you're using software.
No, you still have to have that fundamental understanding.
I think the answer to your question, though, is that should we be using that software? I do not. I think it's, especially when I'm modeling, even if you've got a nice model and you got it set up, and it's on your desk, that's not a value, right? Just because you set it up on a piece of paper or on a spreadsheet or in a software package. The difference is that if I do it manually, software or with Excel, it's harder for me to do the what-if stuff. Just to sit down with the team and say, well, what if we change that part there? Or what if we add redundancy here? Or what if we might experiment in an hour with 20 different configurations and run the software over and over again and seeing how does changes to the design, essentially, the changes to our assumptions impact the overall results. Doing that by hand would take a week, right? Whereas with a good software package, modeling package, we can explore and understand the decisions that we need to make when we're designing a system or designing a line. In today's world, the software tools from regression analysis all the way up to complex system analysis and modeling are vital. We need to know how to use those.
Yeah. In terms of efficiency, effectiveness, like you said, you have to understand what's going into it. But from an efficiency standpoint, being able to put different configurations into the model and see what those outcomes are, to be able to make those trade-off comparisons and analysis, that's vitally important to be able to do quickly. That is one advantage of being able to do that. Are there any other advantages to using that sort of software that you can think of?
Sure. Doing maximum likelihood estimators for regression analysis to do manually. You can do it. It's pretty difficult. You can understand the concept and do it with software and get results in minutes. Markov analysis or the higher order system modeling type systems, or even Monte Carlo analysis, where you take say 10,000 random samples from the various distributions of the input variables. So it might be throughput, it might be temperature, it might be bottle size for this bottling plant I was working on, different setups on the equipment, different line speeds. I could model the Monte Carlo simulation to look at reliability and availability in particular, and I would have to 10,000 times in order to get a distribution result out of it. you could do that manually. It would take you a year. And so there's lots and lots of software-based algorithms in statistics and in model that are only possible because we have this brute force calculator that allows us to do so many iterations of it. And yeah, I think the software tools we have today enable us to do things that our, you know, engineers even a generation ago could only dream about.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Yeah, so they definitely improve the repeatability, the efficiency of what we're trying to do, and allows us to do more, way more complex things that we dreamed of, you know, like you said, 10 years ago. So those are some pretty good advantages. Now, if someone were to be looking to purchase a software like this, whether it's a statistical analysis package, whether it's like a maintenance optimization or analysis package, what should they be looking for when they're going to purchase this? What are the key things they should be asking themselves?
I would put it into like two or three different buckets. One is a lot of different packages allow you to get a free trial for some period of time. It may not save, it may not print. Some give you full capability, but it does some other feature too. But it gives you a trial run out with it. That's the first thing I look for, is I want to go play with it. You know, I'm going to go over the types of problems I'm expecting to do with it. And can I do it? Do I get results? A couple of years ago, and another reliability statistician, we were comparing notes on results we were getting on it. And we ended up trying 8 different software packages, and we got 8 different answers. They were all very close, but they were different. You know, one does it a little differently. Now, if it's a critically important thing for you, you need to do it manually, make sure you get the right answer, and then check your software if you're getting an answer that's reasonably close to what you expect it to be. Is the software itself accurate? Some test packages through it, some test data through it, and see if it's a gut sense most of the time. Does this make sense? Can I interpret it? What do the outputs look like? If your organization lives and dies by PowerPoint, how easy is it to get the results and the graphics into PowerPoint? You don't want to spend 20 minutes doing an analysis and 3 hours trying to get it so you can present it. So the practical stuff, first thing I would look for. The second one is, does it do what I need it to do? If I'm doing regression analysis for reliability work, it better be able to do maximum likelihood estimators on it, because I deal with sensor data. If it's a modeling package and I know I'm going to need Monte Carlo type capability, well, does it have that built in? Is it capable of doing that? Or if I'm doing Markov or PetriNet or block diagrams, what's its limitations? What's its capability? It's going into buying a package and you know where the boundaries are, and that still encompasses what you're trying to accomplish. That's great. If you've got more features, more benefit in the package, you got room to grow. You can solve problems that you haven't thought of yet if it's got more capability. And that's the good part is, can this software grow with me? You know, sometimes it's adding on feature sets or upgrading it or doing other parts, or it just comes, like Minitab comes with a gazillion things in it. But it's still not quite as powerful as their big brother software, Jump. And these are both generic statistical analysis packages. So it's, do I spend the more money on getting Jump now, or do I make the less capable one, which is capable of solving what I need now, and hope it grows for what I'm trying to solve? You got to know what you're trying to do. Does the software do it? And try it. And how easy does it do it? And is there room to expand as you try tackling other bigger problems? You know. So years ago, when I was in the graduate school, I learned how to use Mathematica, which is a very powerful mathematical package. And I can solve about anything with that. I can create models, I can do regressions, I can do simulations, I can do all kinds of stuff with it. But I basically have to program it, so it's more like a programming language. So over the years, I've looked at MathCAD, which is a competitor of Mathematica, and realizing that it's like learning a whole new language. It's just a subtle different way that they go about solving the exact same problems. So whatever package you buy, especially if it's a major purchase, is look at that upfront cost of the package, learning its language, how to make it work. Because if you are switching from package to package to package, it's essentially become multilingual of all these different packages. I like looking at a package that has room to grow for the types of issues we expect to face in the future, so that I don't have to learn a new package to solve those. I can use the one I'm getting good at.
Makes a very good point. Like you said, everyone's a little bit different, whether you look at, you know, ReliaSoft or BQR or any of these others. They're all trying to accomplish the same thing. They're just doing so in a different manner, slightly different manner. So you got to learn all the little intricacies with each one.
You know, they all put the print button in about the same place, but all the other buttons are different. You know, some are, like our software is, it's just the core package. You can do basic stuff with that, which is pretty powerful by itself. But if I want to do maximum good estimators, I need to add a package to it. And they all use a common language, almost, where packages that are refined like BQR and ReliaSoft, they come with their built-in capabilities, unlike R or Mathematica, where I can create need pretty much, because they're just really just programming languages. Whereas the polished ones, they make it much easier to get the work done if the work fits within that package. It depends on what capabilities they have. So it's really back to, is it the right tool for what I need? But it's also the learning curve to get started. I struggle with Photoshop and Illustrator anytime I need to go to use those. I don't do that for a living. I don't use those packages every day. But there's great online help. There's a great community around that helps me learn the particular thing I need to get accomplished. So it's useful for me. But on the statistics stuff, I do use that way more often. So I want something that I understand and can solve a wide range of problems with. And that's a big part of the selection process.
Yeah, like you said, if you go to the more polished package, like say, look at BQR's APM Optimizer, and it's strictly around optimizing maintenance strategies, lifecycle costing, spare stocking strategies. If that's what you're doing every day, then a package like that would probably make the most sense, because that way you don't need to build the model. You just need the data. You still need to know what you're doing. But you can put those in and create all these different models without a huge amount of work. But if you're doing all these custom analysis every other day, then, like you said, R might be the best approach for that. So understanding what you need to do with it, I think, is vitally important.
A question I got the other day was from somebody that's been reading the blog, and I think he has been enjoying the NoMTBF website, and has realized that they need to do a data analysis. And he said, I'm not a reliability engineer. I'm not very good at math. So how can I do this without the math? And I said, well, all right, you can't. You know? I mean, the easiest answer is go hire somebody that knows the math and can do the regression analysis for you and understands it. But yeah, I think part of what we deal with and all of the data that we've got around us, just sitting in a hard drive doesn't do us any good. We need to manipulate it. We need to be able to model it and use it in ways that help us make decisions. Software packages enable us to do that. Enabling us to make good decisions takes that balance of good skill and the right software tool.
That's a great point. You got to have the skill and the right software tool to optimize what you're doing. Now, Fred, if you had any words of wisdom for someone who's looking to purchase or use this type of software, what would that be?
Yeah, is don't be afraid of the math. Don't be afraid of the statistics. There's two courses that come to mind. One of them I just finished, and it's called Mind Shift. And it's on Coursera, and it's free. And the same author did a course that ended up being, or is the most popular, most viewed, most students of any massive online open course, MOOC. She's at over 1.5 million students, the one course she did. And the second one's going to rival it, I'm sure. But the genesis of that course was basically, you need to continue to learn. You need to to explore and to challenge yourself and to get uncomfortable. And many of us got very uncomfortable with the statistics class in college. We had plenty of other things to go learn, so we focused other places. One of our main points was is that we tend to work on things in school and choose in our careers that we know we're already good at. And that doesn't mean you're not good at statistics or you're not good at ballet or whatever skills you want to pick up. Is you just haven't focused on them yet. You haven't spent the time and energy to go through the courses and do exercises and try it. And she said, we're capable of learning so much. And I firmly believe that's true. I would say go to Coursera and take MindShift. It's, I think, a 4-week course. It's kind of, she has interesting editing of her videos, to say the least, but it is entertaining and it is very, very informative. And then if you're going into mine, is get the basic statistics down so that you know when it calls for a Weibull parameter, you know what that is and a chance to get the right numbers input into your modeling, for example. If you're going to get serious into complex system modeling, there's university courses on it. There's University of Maryland has the ability that you can sign up and take individual courses. You don't have to enroll in a PhD program, and there's universities around the world that allow you to do that. It's expensive, but it's one of those things that's a major part of what you're going to be doing. You need to know those skills and get good at them in order to be really effective at what you're doing. So my words of wisdom is don't be afraid of it. Go learn it. Everybody that's in our audience, James, can learn this stuff. It does take work, and that's the part that I think shies a lot of people away. But the results will speak for themselves, and a good statistician on staff is pretty valuable, and it's a good career move. At least it was for me.
Like you said, you got to at least know the basics of stats, what parameters there are, what the terms mean, what you should be inputting for this sort of stuff. You need to know that at a basic. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally I would ask, what is the one thing you've seen done incorrectly? That's one of my closing questions, but I know for that one, that answer is going to be putting someone who doesn't know those models or those definitions or statistics with that software and letting them go nuts. Like, you need to have an understanding of the analysis, the models, all those things ahead of time before you can get to the software.
That's right.
So what is the one action you would want our listeners to take away from this conversation regarding reliability analysis and modeling software?
I mentioned as we were getting ready for this session that I did a webinar on reliability block diagrams and very basic textbook examples of a series system, of a parallel system, and just how to use the model in a simple, simple design discussion and is doing trade-offs and so on. And it was a pretty good turnout for the audience, which surprised me because I thought this was really fundamental stuff. But most of the questions, most of the comments I got back were, you know, this is really useful. We should actually do this. And just as we started this discussion, I'm thinking, you know, well, why aren't you doing this stuff? I don't know how you can design without it. Reliability is not something you can see immediately. I can see the weight. I can see the cost. I can see the time to market. I can see the throughput functionality. All of those things, the design teams generally get a handle on pretty quick and can understand and measure on their bench most of the time, right? Or in a spreadsheet of cost of components. But the reliability impact is more nebulous and it's out there someplace. So creating a reliability model that enables your team to do trade-offs allows you to balance cost or weight or whatever it is. Whereas without the model, it's invisible. You don't know. It's like putting a banner on the wall, make the product reliable, right? Well, what do I do with that? You know, well, the model makes it real. It allows the teams to engage in discussions that include considering reliability, and they have some data to support it and to compare and to do what ifs. Whereas without a model, I think you're flying blind.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So what I took away from this conversation was the software is vital to executing the reliability engineer's job quickly and efficiently and repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have that fundamental understanding of what you're trying to do before you can get to that software piece. It makes you better, It doesn't make you a CRE from nothing.
Yeah, perfect. Good summary.
So Fred, you haven't had you on in a while. So what are you up to? I know you're always got stuff on the go. So what are you up to? What events are coming up? What are you involved with at the moment now?
I think I've plugged Ascendo Reliability relentlessly this year, and I'll continue to do so as the membership continues to grow, which is free. I'm actively working on three courses, the third one just got started. Got two other instructors getting ready to lay out their courses and start recording. It's been an aim or an objective of the site is to have a range of different instructors or presenters providing courses and everything from these kinds of webinar types ideas, which has been active. And thanks, James, for participating with that and making a really cool show here with Rooted in Reliability. But we're looking at expanding the course offerings because there aren't a lot of reliability-centric courses that are not commercial. They're not tied to a particular product or software or consultancy or something like that. So we're looking at creating a place where it's kind of a non-denominational training center. And this year, it really looks like we're going to get that to happen. So that's the big thing for me this year.
I know you've been working hard at it, and I know we've had numerous conversations on a couple courses and still trying to work through some of those.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you're continuing to plow ahead, and I'm looking forward to seeing those new courses up on Ascendo.
That's right. You and I talked about it a couple of times. I have to circle back to you here when I get my head above water. So watch your email.
Yeah, definitely. There's a list of ones to do. It's just a matter of trying to get them done eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you, if I could stay in one place for more than a week at this current moment in time, it'd be nice and enjoyable.
Yeah, it would be. It's coming. You know it's coming. You'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Fred, I want to thank you again for coming on, sharing your knowledge, and, you know, reinforcing one of my key concerns around software that I always have is it won't make you an expert. It just makes you a much quicker expert. So if you don't have the fundamental knowledge, you got to get that first before you can use software to be effective at what you're doing. So it's good to hear that reinforced. But it's also good to hear the advantages to such a software and the impact it can have on an organization. Being able to run multiple iterations or configurations of a model within a day as opposed to years is vitally important when, you know, lead times or time to market are vitally important. So it has its place. We just need to be careful with it.
That's right. Well said.
All right. Well, Fred, thank you very much. And you have yourself a great night.
All right. Thanks, James. Take care.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing the small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.